Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. Monday, January 17th, Martin Luther King Day. And you're listening to the first-of-its-kind radio program produced by mortgage bankers and for mortgage bankers, or mortgage professionals, for mortgage professionals, actually. We include everybody in the industry. And we're keeping you informed on all that is going on with industry. Welcome to all of our regular listeners, as well as a number of new listeners that are joining us as a result of the special guests we have this week, which is Tony Garitano of Progress in Lending and Tyler Sherman of Motivity Solutions. We're going to get to them later in the program. We're going to be talking about technology and very excited about getting updates on all that's going on. I want to start off by talking briefly about Martin Luther King Day. I would encourage each of you to go out and read or listen to by going to the YouTube video of Dr. Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech. It's probably one of those speeches, especially after you hear Alice's session today, you go, we got to have a dream, because if you don't have a dream, I don't know that you're gonna survive some of what's coming down the line at us as an industry. It's just amazing. But I just really appreciate the inspirational aspects of Dr. Martin Luther King's Day, and I thought it would be important to encourage our listeners to go back and listen to that. In that speech, it's almost like it could be written for our mortgage industry. Even though, he says, even though we face difficult today and tomorrow, I still have a dream that is rooted in the American dream. Now, I know his American dream he defined was much bigger than just home ownership, but certainly includes home ownership and so much going on. And I like one of the other phrases he said used is self-evident truths. I think there's things, folks, that we need to get into and realize ourselves, the self-evident truths that we need to realize. He spoke about equality. He talked about hope and faith and freedom. And as we look at what's coming up in this industry, the regulations coming up, it does seem a lot like our freedoms are being infringed upon. I've got a dream that our industry will be strong and vibrant, and we're excited to have you be a part of our program and our listening audience. Thank you so much. And again, go out and listen to Martin Luther King. But also with Martin Luther King Day, it means the markets are closed, and Jill Farr is not going to be able to give us a report on what's happening today, but he's sure going to talk about what happened last week and what's going on yet a little bit later on this week. Joe, good to have you on the program.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to talk about the market after that inspirational thought you just gave us, Dave. There's just not much going on here. But let's talk about interest rates, because we are, you know, if 3 or 4 years ago you were to ask somebody what the best what would they dream the best market would be for mortgages, you'd say interest rates in the fours. Well, here we are. Mortgage rates are low, as we've all seen. They've moved a little lower last week. We had two situations that kind of helped move mortgage rates lower last week. Inflation is always the biggest issue in the eye or in the mind of mortgage investors, and last week we saw both CPI and PPI announced, each of which were a little higher than expected on the overall number, but pretty much at or below expectations on the core number. The overall number includes food and energy costs, and the core number does not. We have seen gas prices going up. We've seen worldwide food prices going up, and so it's kind of sometimes hard to ignore those. But generally, they're not considered trends, and since they are fairly volatile, so inflation was under control yet again. The Fed Beige Book came out, and the Fed, all 12 regions of the Fed, said things are growing, economy's growing nicely, but inflation's under control. So, you know, the market's kind of like seeing that. And then in addition to that, we saw the Treasury auctions, you know, the 10-year and the 30-year Treasury auctions occurred during the week last week. And
That's right. And
both saw strong demand, indicating that there's not a fear among investors that long-term inflation is a concern, and there's still a desire to own mortgage, basically U.S. government guaranteed fixed rate assets. So mortgage rates benefited somewhat from that as well.
We were glad to see that.
Yeah, anytime those auctions come along, we've seen them being very, they've been market moving events each of the last two or three times the auctions have come out, especially as you get to the, you know, the 7, 10 longer termed Treasury auctions. But the economic news that came out during the week was fairly, as expected. Retail sales was a little weaker than expected. Industrial production was better than expected.
Yeah, that one's interesting. That was an interesting one that I thought. Retail sales, I can understand that, but retail industrial production, that implies that a lot of industries out there are somewhat thinking we're past the recession and we're actually starting on the road up, so it appears they'd be gearing up. What about the Beige Book?
No, the Beige Book came in. All 12 regions, as I mentioned, are growing moderately, growing, and inflation is not an issue. So, throughout the week, we had favorable data, it seemed, but it still resulted in a great deal of volatility. As I mentioned, for the week, we had essentially no change in prices or rates. Mortgage rates did decline just a little bit, but the path to get there involved midday price changes just about every day. And one day we had both favorable and an unfavorable price change.
Is your read on that it's just the nervousness in the markets?
It is. There's still a good bit of uncertainty. It's also we're at very low rates, and just any uptick in inflation is going to result in these current rates being an issue for people down the road. So, it's just continued uncertainty.
That's why they got to have your service. What else do we have going on?
Right.
Let's see. That's the way they got to have your service. What about this week? It's going to be fairly. Did we cover last week? Did we cover all of last week?
Yeah, last week it was pretty well done. This week, there's housing data that comes out, which isn't. No one's expecting that to be robust, but it's interesting to all our listeners. Housing starts on Wednesday, and existing home sales on Thursday. Manufacturing information comes out on Tuesday and Thursday with the Empire State Index and the Philly Fed, and those have been stronger than expected of late. And so, may want to watch for that and see if they continue to show strength, and in which case we may have a little pressure, upward pressure on mortgage rates.
Well, very good. It's you got a little time to kick back there and relax, clean the desk a little bit today, Joe. So dust it off. But appreciate you coming in and being with us today and providing our listeners the update on the markets as you do each and every week. Thank you so much. We'll be back right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. And remember, we've got the guests coming up here in just a minute talking about the technology. Tony Garritano. That guy's name is so well known out there, and he writes so much and has reported for 10 or more years about all that's going on in technology. You're going to be really wanting to listen to that. And as well as, Tyler Sherman, probably one of the more exciting products that are out there with the Motivity Solutions, talking about some of the metrics, how to measure them, how to monitor them. And Alice, if there was ever a time, you got to be on top of your game with business. Technology is going to be a great tool, but Alice, tell us, I kind of teed our audience up to let them know what's coming down the line here. We've got some, just a normal update, but there's some interesting information here. Our listeners are going to want to stay tuned and listen tight to every word of you, what you have to report today.
Well, I'll tell you, it's one of those things where you just go, holy cow, how does this happen? So the NMLS, which all of you are familiar with, the National Mortgage Licensing System, for the lenders and the brokers, you've had to go get all the mortgage originators licensed. Well, they did post last year a comment that was going to was proposing to require all lenders and brokers to file call reports. Similar to what a bank has to file, only in much more detail than what you're normally sending in on an annual basis to your state, and there would be volume quarterly reports that had to be filed as well as annual financial reports. Well, it came out for comment, and, I believe we reported on it back at that time, and then it went away. Well, now, if you go to their website, they've got it up there. It's up that starting April 1st, we'll be potentially having to file call reports by state. Now, this is going to roll out by state, so it is your state regulator that will let you know when their starting date is. But the NMLS essentially, is a privately held company. And in a normal rule process, you put something out for comment, it needs to get broad advertising so everybody can respond. I looked at the comments. There were a lot of people that said, what is your authority to be able to require us to file these types of reports? I mean, even K.L. Gates responded, and in their response, they said, where are you getting the authority to impose a regulatory responsibility on us? And as you go through the comments, many other respondents felt the same way. Well, I don't see a document where they respond to that. They basically have said in a statement that they have authority under the SAFE Act, that there's a statement in the SAFE Act that says they will, be monitoring the lenders and so forth, but nothing to this degree. And where's the due process? That's the part I think Dave, before the show.
The part that just drives me crazy.
How do you have an entity that is, starts out basically the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, CSBS, and ARMR, the American Association of Residential Mortgage Regulators. This is all our state regulators are members of these two groups, and then these two groups formed an LLC that's the state registry. So in a sense, people already complain that every time I go to the website I get charged $30 or $40. So now we've got the potential for having to file the call reports. Looks like it's all out there. So folks, go check the website. Take a look at this.
And get charged.
Prepare yourselves. Yeah, essentially I have to give you a heads up to go prepare yourselves as to what your responsibilities are based on the states that you're in. It applies to any entity that has MLOs, mortgage licensed originators. So heads up.
Wow.
So the Federal Registry, those of you who are depositories and you will be having to register your company as well as your originators, that right now they're still projecting that that will be open and ready for your use on January 31st, and then you'll have 180 days, so July 29th-ish, everybody will have to be registered by that time. So that's the part on the NMLS, and I know we're checking into it some more, and we were talking about maybe diving into it in a little more in depth in another show.
Yep, we will be.
All right, great. So new bills. The only bill we're watching right now, somebody, of course, right out of the gate in Congress, January 5th, H.R. 87, simple bill, repeal Dodd-Frank. We're all for it.
Love that bill.
Nothing complicated, right? There's probably the other one out there that's repeal health care, but we're just watching the repeal Dodd-Frank. So we do have that we'll watch and see what happens with it. A couple other things, heads up. we did let you know that FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, has issued a notice of proposed rule. So kind of the, we're looking at proposing a rule that would require a loan or finance company to comply with anti-money laundering and SAR reporting. The comment period closes February 7th, so you just have 2 weeks if you want to dive into reading more about that. I think the hard part is in the logistics of all that, you know, for, again, one more report that we would have to file. Another thing I want to make sure everyone gets a heads up on, we're creeping up to the end of the month here. You have your new Truth in Lending disclosures that will apply as of applications on January 31st. You will have to make sure your LOS providers are using the new form that have the tables on them for your one-year ARMs. The 3-1 ARMs. The 5-1 ARMs are what got, and the interest only's got the extension out until October 1st. And then last but not least, on a couple of other TIL fronts, we are still watching a couple proposed rules where the comment periods closed at the end of last year. And so we'll be watching those in these coming months to see when the Fed may come out. There was the Reg Z higher priced loan proposed rule, and that one was all about changing how we calculate APR, trying to make it easier, but in one sense making it a little more complicated too. But in terms of the APR calculation, streamlining that to include all the fees and then changing the thresholds within the high-priced mortgage loans to help, you know, ease that and make that a little more easier to work with. The big thing in that one that we were very opposed to was it does contain a provision that would require lenders to refund any appraisal or other fees paid by the consumer other than a credit report fee if the consumer decided not to proceed with the mortgage within 3 days of receiving the early disclosures. You know, we got enough money to refund and all these MDIA timings. So this would just add one more layer of timing. So we're definitely watching that and not in favor of that aspect of that particular proposed rule that we'll be watching. Haven't heard anything from FHA. Looks like they've taken the change to the seller contributions off the table at the moment. But we are going to be watching for the lender insuring program changes in the future. So we'll have more for that for you on future programs. That's my wrap,
that's your wrap. Well, I'll tell you, Alice, I'm so stirred up about these call reports starting April 1st. I mean, it's just like I cannot believe these things that have begun to just develop. And what is the authority? I love, you know, I've always enjoyed and respected K.L. Gates by them responding as they did by saying, what in the heck is your authority to require call reports? It's really interesting. Folks, stay tuned each and every week for what Alice brings us. It's so critical. And we have got a lot ahead to be talking about technology. You think technology has been important in the past? Take a look at these call reports. You're going to have tools, folks, that you've never dreamt of. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending, and it's January 7th, and we're talking to talking about many issues going on. We're going to dive in great detail about technology. And someone who is very familiar with technology, in fact, he goes back all the way back to the punch card days, folks. That's how old this guy is. And his name is Andy Schell, also known on the radio as the Prophet Doctor. So what do you think, Andy, about the subject of technology?
Well, thanks, Dave. You know, talking about being old, one of my favorite movies was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly with Clint Eastwood, right? It's a great movie. Well, but that reminds me of technology, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So, you know, technology is good. We know it's good. It's even amazing. You know, we're able to talk on this radio show right now because of technology. We wake up in our house in the morning and the temperature is set without having to get up and put another log on the fire because of technology. You know, everything that happens around the world, we hear about instantaneously, and we can even get our email while we're driving, and that's all because of technology. Although that's actually kind of a dangerous thing to do, and I know I've heard the rumble strip on the side of the road a couple of times as I was reading my email. So, you know, with that confession, I don't do that anymore. I just
like they said, confession's great for the soul, but it's hell on the reputation. So anyway, keep on going. So you don't do that anymore, do you, Andy?
Absolutely not. No, I never do.
Okay.
And actually, I don't anymore because I got the app you told me about where it'll read me my voicemail.
I know. New technology.
Technology is amazing. And, you know, the sad part about it is it's often taken for granted. But there is a bad side on occasion. And when it's bad, it can be really bad. There's lots and lots of examples. One example that I thought was really interesting is the Hubble Space Telescope. Remember when that was launched?
Yeah.
Here's this Hubble Space Telescope that was built by these amazing engineers, the smartest people in the world, and they were coordinating all this activity, and they built this huge telescope with these great big huge lenses, and they launched it and turned it on, excited to see the nebula, and it was out of focus. And it was out of focus because they didn't calibrate some of the lenses right. And, you know, human error made it so, I don't know how much it cost, millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, whatever it was, because of just a human error, it didn't work right. And you may not have ever had this problem, Dave, but if you ever accidentally enter 10 on your microwave rather than 1, bad things happen, I can tell you. The smell of burnt popcorn is not appealing, I can tell you that.
It does.
You know, another bad thing about technology that we see all the time, but it's when we bought the LOS system last summer and it still doesn't work. We hear that story over and over and over.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's ugly, it's also really ugly. And when this happens, it usually happens because of bad data. And when we use technology to make decisions and in the technology is bad data or corrupted process, we end up with a very ugly consequence. Like, we could have bad HMDA data. We could have bad disclosures. We could have bad APRs. And one of the situations we saw, not recently, but maybe 6 months ago, is we had a company that did a cash flow forecast, didn't check the sell formulas, and some of the formulas were wrong, and they thought they had the cash flow to fund the growth of their new branches, and they ended up using their cash to fund the extra volume, and they were wrong, and their cash was tied up in their warehouse until the loans were purchased, and they just about missed a payroll, all because of a simple technology error. So technology can be awesome, but you've got to have the data right. So just because a report is nicely formatted doesn't mean the data is correct. It's important to test the data. So the ugly aspect of technology is when, we plug it in and it doesn't do what we expected it to do. We expected the conversion to a new system to take 30 days, and a year later it's still not working. And, you know, most of the stories I'm talking about are when things didn't go right. It's like we're the firehouse that gets the call when things go wrong, when the business is on fire and needs to get the technology issue put out. So most of the things we go in and fix, but it is possible to make it work right. And there's just 4 primary things to make it really, really run right, and that is having correct inputs. Sounds simple. Have correct internal processing. You know, your programmers did everything right. Have understandable outputs. I mean, as simple as that sounds, that's important too. And then have a really strong conversion where you had knowledgeable, well-planned and trained people helping with the installation. So let me jump in just a little bit about the input part. The input, having good inputs sounds simple. You know, it's not that big a deal. Just put the stuff in there right. Well, a lot of the things that we see that are messed up are because of bad inputs. You can have an interface, a data interface, where the crossover matrix sends the data to the wrong field. We've seen several failed implementations because of bad interfaces. Or you can have data manual input where they put the wrong information or incomplete data in. There's a situation that I know of where a company built a procedure to capture the correct data and put it into the right field, but they didn't fully implement the procedure, so now it didn't get done right. So now they're having to go back and fix thousands, hundreds, maybe 1,000 files because of one simple input management error. And not to belabor the point, but a couple of other issues are you got to get the data input right, and you've got to, if you do get it in there right, you've got to make certain that the internal processing is working right. Because if you don't have the internal processing right, then you get wrong outputs. Even an Excel file can have hundreds. We've got Excel files that have thousands of cell formulas. All it takes is just one wrong cell, and the answer's wrong. So we've even seen financials that look professional and are assumed to be right, but the numbers are wrong because the balance sheet didn't balance. We had a situation in a couple of years ago where a person said, look at this, isn't this an awesome financial statement? We look at it, and the balance sheet didn't balance. It came out of their system, so they assumed it was right. It looked cool, had a nice format, but the numbers were wrong. So you can't just assume that because it came out of a computer that it's right.
So, the bad news about that was he was at a conference, and we were the last meeting of his all of his meetings, and he had been handing out a balance sheet that didn't balance all while at the conference. So it's just amazing. You think the most obvious things would be obvious, but they're not, and that's really a good point. Keep on. I'm sorry.
No. Yeah, interject any time, Dave. Feel free. So the other thing about this that I was mentioning of the three things that mess up before conversions is you can have a good input and a good processing process where you can have the internal processing inside the computer, all the calculations and all the data management works perfectly, but the output's not understandable. And when you have that, even if you've got everything in right and everything calculated right, if the end user doesn't understand what the report says, you still fail. The technology failed. So it results from not accurately communicating to the end user the conclusions from the system because the report was too complicated. So it's important that the information that comes out is understandable or even better on a nice, clean dashboard. And that's one of the things that Motivity is really amazing at, is helping people with this exact point, having understandable data.
Yes.
So
we're excited to have them as guests. Yes.
Yeah, so the other issue that I wanted to touch base about technology is in the having a realistic expectation of the conversion. Conversions are much more difficult than we expect, whether if it's a conversion to a new LOS or an installation of an OLOS or a conversion to a different accounting system. Things are often much more complicated than they appear on the surface. We think that it's just open the box, plug it in, and it works. It's like our office telephone works every time. The internet works most of the time, and desktop computers usually work when we turn them on. Where the reality is, the technology is very, very complicated. The phone works because there's a lot of people doing the right things at the right time with lots of equipment working correctly and millions of programs of code working perfectly to make the phone work. So the interesting part is sometimes the simpler the technology looks, the more likely the technology is very complicated. So it's very complicated behind the scene to make it look easy on the front. Technology, new systems, is not where you walk in the room, turn on the switch, and the light's on. It's more like building a new room on your house. It's taking all the old wiring out, putting the new wiring in. It's important to have realistic expectations as we do all this stuff. So if you buy a new LOS or buy a new accounting system, expect the integration planning and actual implementation to take months and require lots of hours of support. Now, if your staff has a full-time job and is busy, which you'd expect them to be, you need to bring on a conversion expert, someone to help with the planning, and you're going to need to bring on additional support for months. You need to do planning before conversion. You need to do implementation testing. You need to do the actual switch and then the post-conversion management. You have to do all that stuff because if you don't, you'll call us because your technology is going to be on fire. You've got to do these steps in order and correctly. So don't underestimate technology conversions. Do it once and do it right the first time. They are time-consuming. They're complicated. Don't underestimate them. And watch the implementation issues. So we see that all the time. You know, technology is our friend. It's something really important to us. It lets us use GPS. It lets us look, cook a potato in our microwave quickly. And if it's used right,
or overcook it.
Yeah, or overcook it. It can be an amazing tool, but it takes conditions to make it work right. It doesn't just, generally speaking, plug in, changing a new LOS, changing a new accounting system. Be sure to have a technology partner that understands the conditions that make it work correctly. So that's the profit doctor for today, Dave.
That's good, good. And one of the technology providers that we have on the program has got extensive experience as a mortgage banker. And I tell you, it's so good to have those additional insights. Great point, Andy. Thank you so much. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And we'll be right back after this brief word.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Tracks.
Did you catch the story by Carrie Curry at HousingWire.com that talks about lenders walking away from foreclosures in Chicago? The issue is that the cost of foreclosing, you know, maintaining the property or tearing it down and so on, can be so expensive that they never actually complete the process. In most cases, the houses are vacant and then simply ignored. For example, there are nearly 1,900 houses in Chicago where foreclosures were filed between 2006 and the first half of last year that have no activity taking place today. The bad news for the city is that these homes often become eyesores to the community and places for drug dealers and other bad people to hang out. You can read this story called Lender Walkaways and Foreclosures Threaten Chicago at HousingWire.com. And continuing on the foreclosure theme, I recommend you check out the interactive site posted by Marketplace, one of my favorite public radio broadcasts. They follow the ownership chain for a property in Los Angeles as it changes hands over the period of 8 years, tracking both through the boom and bust times. It's a beautiful presentation filled with good information. You can find it by searching for Anatomy of the Housing Crisis at marketplace.publicradio.org. Those were the sites that caught my attention this past week for the Mortgage Minute. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lickin' on Lending Show or online at dmdinc.com. PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back. This is David Lickin with Lickin' on Lending, and we are so excited to have with us the guests that we have. We have Tony Garitano, who is the journalist. He's a researcher. He's a speaker, mostly about mortgage technology.
Hello, it sounds like we may have lost Dave there on the call.
Alice, this is Joe. I'm here.
All right, we still have you. So let's go ahead, Dave. I'm sure he'll jump back in as soon as he can get reconnected. And I want to welcome to the program. Let me grab my notes here, Tony Garitano. And Tony, I know that you have a lot to tell us about the program. And why don't you start with how did you start Progress in Lending Associations, or why did you start Progress in Lending Association? Tony, do we have you on the line?
I am here. Do you hear me?
All right, now I can hear you. Great.
Good to be with you guys. I travel a lot, as you can imagine, and I listen to a lot of people talk about the mortgage industry They've got a lot of good ideas. They're really visionary. They feel really passionately about the mortgage space. The problem, as I saw it, was that while I was out there and I was interacting with them and I was listening to them, the mainstream mortgage lender does not have that same opportunity. So I started Progress and Lending Association really to give those people a voice because they've got great ideas and they deserve to be heard.
Hey, Tony, this is Joe Farr. I've been in the production side of things for a long time and seen a lot of innovation in technology. But at the same time we've seen that, let me give you a few examples. This will go back a little ways, but things like automated underwriting engines and automated valuation models and MERS, for that matter, all of these were great innovations that required the use of technology. But pretty much all of those are being criticized now as having, you know, maybe been too innovative. Are we in a position where we have a chance to innovate this, our processes without going to the point where regulators say we've gone too far? Or just where do we stand in the mortgage market today as far as being able to employ innovative solutions?
Well, Drew, I mean, you bring up a lot of good issues there, and I wanted to take a little bit of time to address them. First, people have criticized automated underwriting because it enabled loans that probably shouldn't have been originated to be originated in mass. The problem, as I see it, was not with the technology, but rather with the implementation of the technology.
Mm-hmm.
If the investor guidelines were not loosened to begin with, then those loans would not have been approved. Whether technology made those loans go through the process faster than usual, to me, is a moot point, because if you put bad stuff into technology, technology is going to give you bad stuff out.
So speaking of bad technology, I had to jump. Tony, you got to figure out how to solve drop phone calls on when you're using voice over IP. So you know what?
Talk about Dave.
Where did you go? I was launching into my discourse here about introducing Tony and our guests, and then I hear our producer Drew. Thank God we've got Andy Alvey out there as our producer helping me out. He says, Dave, you're gone. So I apologize for dropping on you guys.
No, no problem at all. Dave.
Jumping in. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So conversely, if we continue the conversation about automated underwriting in particular, what we're seeing today is that automated underwriting is being used to do a lot of really good quality loan modifications, for example, and it's also being used to get borrowers into vanilla paper in record numbers. So if you use the technology right, I think it can be a very big positive for the industry. Innovation is being pushed today by a lot of things that you guys mentioned earlier in the program. If Big Brother continues to get involved in the mortgage space the way it seems like he has been and will continue to be going forward, lenders are going to have to use technology to innovate. And they're going to have to do it in a smart way. I mean, in your prior segment, Andy talked about inputs and outputs and conversions. And while that, I think, is important, but what I think is the most important thing when it comes to technology is, are you aligning the technology with sound business strategies and business processes? Because if you're not, then technology is not going to help you.
Well, Tony, so you know, in the past, the technology was used to improve efficiencies, and now it sounds like it may be necessary just to keep up with all the regulatory things. Or is it more or less important these days that we implement new innovative technologies?
Well, Joe, I just don't think lenders have a choice. They have to stay on top of the regulatory environment. They have to be as efficient as possible. And technology really helps you do both. So it used to be a nice to have. Now it's a I gotta have it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're so right. I think to the points that we were talking about earlier, I think it's going to be impossible, especially look at this call report that Alice just announced out there. So critical. Andy, I know you've got some questions.
Yeah, I do. Hi, Tony. Thanks for joining the show today. How do recent technology mergers and acquisitions impact innovation, in your opinion, now?
It's a good question, Andy, and I think that what we're going to see is we're going to see a lot more of those mergers and acquisitions this year. We saw, as you know, Calix buying a PPE, and then Ellie Mae followed, and they bought a PPE. Last year, Fidelity bought a PPE. And we're going to see a lot of those loan origination systems buy up niche providers. The reason being, a lender doesn't want to leave his or her core system. They want a streamlined workflow where they can stay in one system. So what's happening is these niche best-of-breed players are looking for an exit strategy, and the prices are becoming more reasonable. So loan origination systems and larger companies are going to acquire those best-of-breed players and try really hard to integrate them into their core system. The problem that I see is that integrating, you know, Andy, as you mentioned, is not easy, especially when it's two completely different systems. So while the LOS may become more fully fleshed, I'm not sure that an end-to-end system is going to be feasible for the near term. And I think it might stall innovation because an LOS is going to steer you towards their new PPE because they just bought it. But mm-hmm. that new PPE may not be the best PPE for you. So I would keep my eye out on what my LOS is doing, and I would keep my mind open to the possibilities of continuing to deal with best-in-class providers.
Yeah, there you go. It's like the tail wags the dog, the technology defines your business processes as opposed to the other way around,
yep.
which is also an issue. How does this affect innovation when we have the GSEs mandating data-driven appraisals or the UMDP having to be applied for whole loan files? How do you see that affecting innovation?
Oh, I say it's about time. I've been a big supporter of the work of MISMO since it started in 1999, and the mortgage industry, in order to move forward, in my opinion, needs to be more data-driven. And when the mortgage industry can truly standardize around open data standards like MISMO, I think it benefits everybody. The problem is that the investors historically didn't mandate it, and some of them didn't even accept it. So lenders are like, look, if my investor's not going to accept it, I'm not going to do it. If my investor is not going to mandate it, I'm not going to do it. Well, now investors are accepting MISMO. They are mandating it, and I think that's going to improve the mortgage process, and it's going to enable lenders to innovate because they're going to be able to do creative things with the mortgage process that were never even possible. So I'm all for it.
That's good.
Well, and just to shift gears a little bit on that front from the lender's viewpoint, just the advantages of some of the things that, technology can bring just in simple dashboards. So am I understanding correctly, the things that you have put together can work with all the major loan origination systems, and so how would a lender look to use that going forward to satisfy, say, regulator requirements, you know, MDIA?
I think that is probably something that Tyler Sherman would probably be able to
answer
better than me. Motivity actually does offer dashboarding technology.
Mm-hmm.
Progress in Lending is not a technology vendor. But I think that, to your point, technology like the technology that Motivity offers can be very valuable, especially if you're going to use those best-in-class providers, because they can translate the data in and out in between systems in a seamless way without it being corrupted. And that's one of the benefits of going with a vendor like Motivity. I think another benefit and another way that lenders can become more data-driven is to concentrate more on the point of sale and get more technology up at the front of the process, whether that be technology that enables you to check for fraud, whether that be quality control technology. I think that what's going to happen is borrowers are going to increasingly go online to shop for a loan. Whether they lock the loan online is still up for grabs, but if I can provide a more data-driven point of sale, then I'm going to be able to carry that data throughout the process a lot easier.
That's a great point. Folks, we have as our guest today Tony Garitano, who has worked as a journalist, a researcher, a speaker in mortgage technology space for 10 or more years now. And in 2010, he founded Progress in Lending to serve the mortgage professionals in sharing ideas on how to move the mortgage industry forward in a positive way. And boy, I tell you, we can't have enough people with that desire to serve in that area. And Tony was, by the way, many of you know this already, but Tony was the editor of Mortgage Technology Magazine, a Source Media publication, and was the technology reporter for all the Source Media publications that they had on. So anything that was going on about technology, Tony was in the forefront. Again, he's been at it for 10 years, just a wealth of knowledge, and we're going to give you his website that you can go to and sign up for the blog on a regular basis. Joining in on the conversation, now we're going to invite Tyler Sherman, who is a co-founder, present CEO of Motivity Solutions. Tony was just talking about that company, and so importantly, we need to bring him into the discussion now. They're a leading software provider that enables revenue optimization, one of Andy Schell's favorite words, and increasing organizational efficiencies. We're going to get in exactly how we do that, but before, I think it's an important note, before they formed Motivity Solutions, Tyler and his brother and some of his family were the owners or co-founders and owned a company called Watermark Financial. It was one of the top 10 FHA lenders that utilized some of the same proprietary technology we're going to be talking about today. So when you consider Motivity, it came out of a company that uses a proprietary system. And what I found most interesting about this is they produced over 1,000 loans, funded loans per month, and they did it with only 150 people. Folks, our last mortgage company I was a partner in was producing that, and I want to tell you, we almost had at least six times that number in the number of people. So that is a really impressive statistic. Tyler, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I apologize to both of you guys for not getting an introduction at the top. That's the joys of, again, technology. We should have had Andy just talk the good, not the bad. I mean, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. We should have just left out the bad and the ugly part because we experienced it when Murphy's Law showed up. Welcome to the program to both of you. And Tony, why don't you introduce and get Tyler into talking a little bit why you're so excited about what's going on there at Motivity.
Well, Dave, I mean, the one thing that has always impressed me about Motivity is what you brought up. I mean, they were bankers before they were technology providers. And while they were bankers, they actually developed proprietary technology that they used in-house. So I think that that colors what they do as technology vendors, because they're not just offering technology that does X, Y, and Z because X, Y, and Z is cool. So I guess if we were to talk to open it up with Tyler, you know, Tyler, what do you think is the benefit of having a lender background? You know, how does that make what Motivity does a little bit different?
Well, I think, first of all, thanks for the introduction. I think the biggest thing is that, you know, we have been mortgage bankers, and we feel the pain and understand what mortgage bankers go through. And more importantly, we understand how to apply technology to solve those pains. As you stated earlier, our past life was with Watermark Financial Partners, and we kind of had the opportunity to look at some of the technology that was out there and really didn't find a system that fit our needs. And as Andy stated earlier, we wanted a technology platform that conformed to our processes. We didn't want to transform our processes to meet the system. Fortunately, we had Todd Sherman, who's my older brother, and he's our technology guru, and he's built three or four loan origination systems in his past, and we were fortunate enough to have him in the family, and he built our end-to-end system at Watermark Financial Partners. So that is really what made us efficient.
You got the been there, done that T-shirt as we use in our firm. So you guys knew exactly what you're wanting and what you're looking at. Alice, I know you've got some questions to jump in on.
Yeah, Tyler, what do you see as the major concerns on the minds of mortgage bankers going forward here in 2011?
I would have to say that it's probably going to be the predicted drop in originations. I mean, I'm seeing anything from, you hear 20 to 40% drop in originations this year. And so that has to be on the mind of all mortgage bankers right now. And what do you do with that? I mean, you can't just throw people at problems anymore, and you can't throw people towards processes. You have to use technology to really become more efficient. And so I think that's probably the biggest concern that I see from mortgage bankers and from our customers is how can we become more efficient with what we have? And, you know, we try to help people with getting more out of their business, so getting more out of their people, getting more out of their processes, and getting more out of their systems. And I think that's really what technology can help these mortgage bankers in this day and age as they face a tightening origination market.
So define what you mean, how you look at business intelligence, or what is meant by business intelligence?
Well, business intelligence, I mean, it's a term that has been used in other industries for quite some time. And fortunately, mortgage banking is starting to come around and starting to look at data in different ways. And when I look at business intelligence, I really look at it as turning data into actionable information. So taking disparate systems, tying all that data into one data source, and we call one version of the truth. And that's really the key, is to have clean data all in one location, and then you can start tracking, measuring, monitoring. And it's amazing to this day how many mortgage bankers still run reports and drive a lot of their company off of an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, you'd be surprised how many don't even have that.
That's the truth.
Here's my list that's closing at 2 o'clock.
No, and you're exactly right. And, you know, what we try to help companies do, and it's really, we call it culture-changing technology. What we try to do is really help companies track, measure, and monitor everything about their organization and try to become more performance-driven. And so, you know, it is a shock to some companies where they're not used to tracking and managing their company in the ways that we help them do it, but it's going to be necessary going forward in this market.
Well, Tyler, it's Andy. You know, I'm one of the raving fans of Motivity, I'll confess. It's an amazing system because it does exactly what Tyler's talking about. What are some of the quick stories you've noticed in pulling the curtain back so mortgage bankers suddenly realize, oh, my gosh, I've got twice as much staff as I need for my volume? Or what are some of the things you've seen?
Well, I think people are just, first of all, amazed at how dirty their data is. You know, we've had organizations that are using three different dates as their closing date in their origination system between their channels. I mean, that, you know, for a closing date, that is something that should be the same field across all of your organizations. So it's just really getting that control tower and that high-level view of your organization and finally getting that, and as we talked about earlier, you know, to dashboard that and have live information at your fingertips. And it's really giving lenders these days information that they never had before. So I think the biggest thing is just the people are really upset sometimes when they figure out how bad their data is underneath the hood.
Tyler, this is Joe. Is the dashboard, and I've heard you guys talk about scorecarding, and is that what you see on the dashboard?
You can see a few different things. You can see report visualization, data visualization, task management. It's all kind of just your one-stop shop or your control tower as an individual employee. But as far as scorecards go, a scorecard is really a compilation of 5 to 10 to 15 key performance indicators. So what we do is take these key performance indicators or metrics and tie them all together into a scorecard. And a great example of that is probably, for any football fans out there, I know we have the playoffs going on right now, is a quarterback rating, where you have 5 to 10 different metrics on a quarterback, and they kind of normalize the information and give it to us football fans out there in something that we can understand. You know, your quarterback rating is 122 out of, you know, whatever the highest score is, and it really allows you to normalize and look at information and rank employees, rank branches. We go all the way down to loan level scorecards, so you can look at loan.
Oh, one of our favorite expressions, loan level.
That's exactly right. And so you do loan level accounting, loan level profitability, and we do down to data quality on a scorecard where you can look at who changed a loan, when they changed it, how many times they changed it, and you can actually score the quality of an individual loan. And then you can look at your pipeline health overall and say, look, you know, are these loans, is the data good on these loans? So scorecarding really has a lot of different facets. The most common are probably employee performance scorecards. So you have an underwriter scorecard or a broker scorecard. And, David, we talked about loan officer scorecards on our webinar with you, and we were talking about loan officer compensation, where people are looking for ways to compensate their loan officers without, you know, having to pay on the terms and conditions of the loan. So
that was a great webinar. So many people I wish everyone could have listened in on that, because it was really a great webinar to really drill in. And I think one of the things that I really enjoy most about your approach, Tyler, is you know, you're not out here saying we're the best. You just talk about what you're trying to accomplish. You talk about, I liked what something that we were talking with Tony about a little bit earlier, is, you know, what are you about? You're here to serve an industry that is desperate need of finding out what's going on, metrics of what's going on, and especially when Alice introduces report, like the new call reports that are coming out in the marketplace. I mean, it is more essential that we manage the metrics and what's going on in performance metrics. You can't there say, you know, ignorance is not an excuse, and you don't need to be ignorant about what's going on inside your operations. Share quickly, just got a few brief moments here, so in about 60 seconds or less, share some ideas of how lenders can drive efficiency by embracing technology.
Real quickly, I would say, first of all, to integrate systems, like I said before, getting one version of the truth, getting all information at your fingertips, then you can start to drive and manage metrics across your organization. And then that goes down to the people or employee level, creating kind of a self-competitive environment, that competitive culture where people are looking and saying, hey, I did 4 loans today. The person next to me did 6. You know, creating that environment where it's a performance-driven environment and it's proactive versus reactive. And then I would say really processes. Automating manual processes is key to the future in mortgage banking. If you are going to a website and inputting information that is not efficient, obviously, leads to bad data quality. So driving efficiencies and automation wherever you can throughout your organization, I think, is the key to moving forward.
Well, we've had as our guest this week Tony Garitano, who is the founder of Progress in Lending. If you do not get his blog or are not subscribed to it, you need to do that. We're going to have Tony give that to you in just a moment. We've also had Tyler Sherman, who's CEO of Motivity Solutions, a great solution. Again, privileged to get to know both of these gentlemen, to be a part of their companies. The reason I'm so excited about what Tyler's technology is doing, it's the very tool. I'm visual-oriented. A lot of guys that run these organizations are more visual-oriented. They want to see the data in a graphical representation and then be able to drill into the things that they see, warning the red lights or the orange lights on the dashboard, so to speak. It's really exciting. Tyler, how can people get on? Give your website real quickly. How can they get to learn more about you?
MotivitySolutions.com is our website. And,
simple, M-O-T. Give it out. Spell it out for us. For those
okay,
of us that are
M-O-T. M-O-T-I-V-I-T-Y. Solutions.com.
We got that one.
All right.
All right, good. Thank you so much for being with us. Tony, tell folks how they can subscribe and be a part of your daily blog. It's just so well written.
Thank you, Dave. I mean, our website is Progress, P-R-O-G-R-E-S-S, inlending.com, and subscriptions are free.
Yeah, subscriptions are free, and also you can then Tomorrow's Mortgage Executive, a great publication, and I have the privilege of writing in both of them. So thank you so much. Tony's going to be a part of the regular program each week, bringing us updates, quick updates on what's going on, technology, everything technology. I want to remind everybody that we have Campus MBA. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, and I are doing a webinar, start a 5-week series starting this Tuesday. If you have not registered, go out to the Campus MBA website, register, and become a part of it. Valuable information. You will not want to miss it. Next week, we've got the Future Mortgage Leaders coming back to talk about that report they did. We've got a lot of people wanting more detail, more depth. We're going to be doing that next week. Folks, have a great week. Again, have a great week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.